Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as
Christian Wood,
he's our guy.
We still got
Ja'Shawn Tate.
Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Christian Wood's ankles are apparently made of rubber as the Rockets come up just shy against the Phoenix Suns, 109-103. What's up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at ClutchCityCR. So before I dive into this one, first off, these late tip-offs suck. This one started at 8:30, and as the game wrapped up and as I was prepping all my stuff for the recap podcast, I told myself, oh, I'll just go lay on the couch for a minute. And then, bam, 9 a.m., which was awesome. So I apologize for getting this one out a little bit later than usual, but that's what happens when you go to rest your head and you're very tired and big oof. So the Rockets, I'm getting a little tired of saying the Rockets came up just short, because they really did. I mean, and this was such a game where they had almost no business being back in this game, but they did it with their defense. They went on a 15-2 run to get it down to a one-possession game at 103-101. DeAndre Ayton hits a couple free throws, and they kind of pull away from there. But this was a game where the Rockets were down by as many as 20 points. It looked like it was going to be a complete and utter blowout. And then the biggest problem was, just before the half, Christian Wood went down with a really horrendous ankle sprain. I mean, I posted the video on Twitter and it was bad. Like, his ankle went sideways. Like, his foot was perpendicular to the rest of his leg, and that is not how a foot is supposed to look. Matt Bullard and Bill Worrell talking about on the broadcast, Matt was thinking he was going to be out for at least a couple of weeks. And then we got word that, you know, originally it was, okay, he's questionable to return. Then we got word that he's actually back out on the court at halftime, getting shots up, unbelievably getting shots up. And then he plays the second half, and he played really, really well in the second half. You know, he had kind of a quiet first half, but he played really well in the second half on the way to 20 points and 11 rebounds. The Rockets had three guys score 20-plus in this one. Eric Gordon put in 22 points on 9 of 20 shooting. Victor Oladipo, 22 points. Some pretty terrible efficiency for him. Just 7 of 22 shooting, although he was 7 of 7 at the free throw line. And then that was the main scoring punch for the Rockets. It was kind of a well-balanced scoring affair, honestly. All 10 Rockets who played scored in some capacity. Now, I will say that we also didn't see any P.J. Tucker, for those of you wondering. We didn't see any P.J. Tucker in the second half. Apparently, he was having some abdominal discomfort, some struggles there. And so we'll talk about P.J. Tucker in just a moment and why that maybe wasn't the worst thing in the world. But as far as this game goes, Christian Wood has to be the player of the game. He absolutely has to. I mean, and after the game, he said, you know, he in his post-game interview, he was saying, you know, my team needed me, so I needed to be out there. And, you know, the sentiment is very admirable, and I appreciate that from him, as long as it's not going to lead to him being out even further by playing on a bum ankle. Because that ankle sprain looked really rough. But as long as the team doctor said, hey, man, if you can play through it, go for it. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. And he decided to play through it. I mean, that's the kind of dog that he is. He's got that junkyard dog mentality. Ja'Shawn Tate was accurate when he talked about this team having that junkyard dog mentality. But ultimately, I feel like this game was kind of lost in a twofold way. They utilized drop coverage for a portion of this game, and having, you know, playing drop coverage with your bigs against Chris Paul and Devin Booker, who can feast off those mid-range pull-ups, it's just a bad idea. You're going to have a bad time, and that's exactly what happened for the Rockets. Booker and Paul kind of were getting whatever they wanted throughout the course of some of this game, just off those mid-range pull-ups. And then DeAndre Ayton was the other big one. So Paul had 13 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, kind of a quiet night for him. Booker, 24 points, 5 boards, 2 assists on 10 of 18 shooting. And then Ayton had 26 points on 11 of 15 shooting, 17 rebounds, 6 of which were offensive, and then 3 assists and 5 blocks. They had no answer for DeAndre Ayton, who was just feasting on the interior. I mean, and this is going to be an issue until Christian Wood bulks up a little bit, until he, you know, kind of understands how to go up against some of these bigger centers in the league. The Rockets are going to struggle in some of these matchups, and that's exactly what we saw. It got a little better early on, It got a little better later on, I should say, because early on, I mean, specifically early in the game, I remember there were a couple tip-ins that Ayton had where he didn't even bring the ball down. He just went up with one hand with his back against, you know, whoever he was boxing out on the offensive glass, and just grabs the ball and, like, throws it back into the hoop with almost zero effort. Like, it was a little embarrassing, but that's just, he was just having himself a really, really big game. Now, the Suns didn't, like, destroy the Rockets as far as, like, second chance points go. In fact, the Rockets were not that far behind. It was 15-12 in favor of Phoenix as far as second chance points go. But it just really felt like Ayton's presence in the middle, both offensively on the offensive glass, kind of getting them some second shot opportunities, as well as defensively, Ayton was just kind of clogging things up early on, making life a little bit difficult for the Rockets, unfortunately. But for this team to be able to claw their way back into the game down as many as 20 points, it shows integrity. It should, right? This team could have easily hung its head and just been like, you know what? We're already down 20. You know, we've got injuries. Tucker's over there on the sideline. John Wall's out. We still don't have Daniel House. You know, we're still trying to learn how to play together. We're just going to, you know, we can hang our heads and just, you know, we'll get it next time, right? And that's not the mentality they had. They went out there and they worked their asses off defensively to get themselves back into this game. And so I want to talk about the defense coming up in just a second. Also want to talk about the offense, because honestly, I think the offense was the bigger concern this game. So I want to talk about that. And we've got that coming up after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is basically impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why would you want to endure the often pointless and let's face it, sometimes intimidating questioning, like, is your car an LX or an EX? And then you have to wait while the person goes behind the counter trying to find the parts on the computer, and they can only pick the brands that their warehouse just so happens to carry. Look, you've got computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. The great thing about rockauto.com is that their catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything, and I mean everything, that you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the important part, be sure to write "Locked On" in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, do me a favor, if you haven't done it already, I'm sure you have, but if you're not subscribed to the podcast, if you haven't reviewed the podcast on Apple, whatever, do me a favor, drop me a quick review. I would sincerely appreciate it. I do read every single one of those, and they brighten my day. So if you enjoy this podcast in any capacity, if it's part of your regularly scheduled programming, please do me a favor, drop that review for us. Now, continuing on with this one, Rockets 109, or sorry, I wish the Rockets were the 109 score. Phoenix Suns 109, Rockets 103, moving the Rockets to 4-9 on the season. So let's look really quickly. I mean, as far as the offense-defense thing goes, the defense in this game, I thought, was really off the charts. They played well enough defensively to win this game. I mean, the Rockets had an offensive rating of 99.2 and a defensive rating of 105. So, you know, that defensive rating is more than good enough to win this game. Where they really, really struggled throughout stretches of this one was offensively. They just could not buy a bucket. Now, one of those issues was at the top of the fourth quarter, the Rockets went scoreless for almost like 5 minutes. And that's just, you can't do that against an NBA team as good as the Phoenix Suns. And I think a big part of that is they don't have that floor general primary facilitator out there. Now, there might be, you might be thinking, oh, well, I thought in Silas's offense, there's not supposed to be a ball dominant player or no. That's not, and that's part of where the frustration came from with why James Harden wouldn't buy in. Luka Doncic is a very ball-dominant player, and he thrived in Silas's system last season, so just a year ago. So what they need, though, is they need a traditional playmaker, floor general out there as kind of the safety net or safety valve for this offense, because even though Victor Oladipo can handle the ball, even though Eric Gordon can handle the ball a little bit, Tate, Cousins, Wood, none of them are traditional point guards who know how to facilitate and orchestrate an offense. And I think that's where we saw a lot of struggles with this Rockets team. They did have 16 turnovers leading to 16 Phoenix Suns points. Now, they also generated a fair bit of turnovers. They generated 17 turnovers leading to 23 Rockets points. Six of those turnovers coming from Devin Booker, four of them from Chris Paul, which is, you know, pretty uncharacteristic for the point guard himself. So the Rockets did a good job defensively creating havoc, getting into those passing lanes, and then getting out in transition, getting some easy buckets. And I want to talk about some of those individual defensive performances here in just a second. But as far as the offense goes, John Wall cures a lot of the issues that are plaguing this team right now. Now, unfortunately, it looks like he's not going to play. We got word from Stephen Silas right before the Suns game that it looks like John Wall's not going to be playing either Friday against the Pistons or Saturday night against the Mavericks. So they'll hold him out for the remainder of this upcoming weekend. And then he should be back for Tuesday against the Washington Wizards, assuming the Wizards actually have a team to field, to put out on the court, because the Wizards have had a bunch of games postponed due to COVID. So we'll see how that plays out. If anything, if that game is postponed, then it just gives John Wall even more time to rest and recuperate and get back to normal before Thursday night's game, who I'm not 100% sure who that one's against. Let's see really quick. Thursday night's game against the, if my webpage would load, Thursday night's game against the Portland Trailblazers. There we go. Okay, so that would, you know, honestly wouldn't be too upset about that one if they did postpone the Rockets-Washington Wizards game, save it for a later date, that kind of thing. But in addition to John Wall immediately answering some of the questions with this team and kind of patching up some of those holes that we're seeing offensively, he's also an excellent defender. He's a great point of attack defender. So that there's not going to be like a sudden drop off between what he brings you and what the current starting backcourt of Eric Gordon and Victor Oladipo give you. And then the biggest thing, I think, honestly, is it then allows Eric Gordon to transfer himself back to that sixth man of the year role where he gets to be that scoring punch off the bench. And having a dynamic guard rotation of John Wall, Victor Oladipo, and Eric Gordon, those are all guys who can get after it offensively, yes, but they're all really good defenders at the guard spots. I cannot remember a time where the Rockets had three significantly plus level defenders at the guard spot who could also carry their own offensively. The closest you can maybe argue is back when they had Chris Paul and Eric Gordon and then obviously James Harden. But even then, James Harden was not near the level of, you know, point of attack defender that these three guys are at. And there were obviously points in a game where James Harden would kind of mentally check out a little bit. So this is a really, really good defensive team with a bunch of really strong individual defenders. And going down the list, you know, specifically in this game, there were possessions where Jayshon Tate made a really big impact down the line even further. Sterling Brown looked really good for certain stretches of this game. David Nwaba deserves a shout out because as much as his offense has struggled at times and kind of bogged down things offensively, I really do think that off the bench is where he can thrive because he's such a high-energy player. And he plays full throttle all the time. I mean, watching him pick up Chris Paul full court, multiple possessions in this Suns game was amazing to see. Just being that irritant defensively, getting inside the jersey of the player that you're trying to hold and really making life uncomfortable for them to the point where at one point Chris Paul just kind of, threw his body into David Nwaba and flailed his arms to pick up the foul call, kind of, trying to let David Nwaba know, hey, I can get a foul call whenever I want. But Nwaba didn't back down after that. He still stayed right there, glued to Chris Paul, making life just absolute hell for him offensively. And, looking at, again, with what Nwaba brings you on that end of the court, as well as the cutting, the finishing, the transition play that he can also give you, the shooting is an issue, but this is also why it feels like he's probably best served coming off the bench for, say, anywhere from those, 8 to 12 minutes a night off the bench. You put him in at the tail end of the first or beginning of the second or whatever, however the lineups should look for Steven Silas, and then he just gets to go all out for those, 8 to 12 minutes that he's in the game, or even 7 to 10 minutes, whatever numbers, Silas is comfortable with, and then he gets to go back and rest, and he gets his second stint in the second half, rather than having to conserve himself. If he's playing more so like starters minutes, he has to kind of hold back a little bit. Whereas if you're only playing 15, anywhere from 14 to 18 minutes a night, and you're doing them in these little short 8-9 minute bursts, then you get to just go all out the moment you're out there on the court, give everything you've got from the moment that you're on the court to the moment you sit back down, rather than thinking about having to preserve yourself for the tail end of the game. Am I closing? Am I not? I just think it's a better fit for David Nwaba off the bench. We really saw stretches in this game where he was so impactful. He was a +8 in his 22 minutes off the bench. And then looking at some of the other bench guys, Sterling Brown was also a +8. Mason Jones was a -15, unfortunately. Ben McLemore, a -7. Cousins was a -9. P.J. Tucker was a team worst -23. So I said I'd talk about him a little bit. It probably wasn't the worst thing in the world that P.J. Tucker sat out, because the Rockets were actually, with P.J. Tucker on the floor, they had a 94 offensive rating and a 117.6 defensive rating. With P.J. Tucker off the floor, their offense skyrocketed to a 120 offensive rating and an 89.1 defensive rating. So P.J. Tucker was definitely bogging this team down a little bit. And it's tough because P.J. Tucker is such an excellent role model for some of these young guys. But if he can't maintain some level of consistency in his game, because he's had some good games this season and he's had some really bad games this season, if he can't find a level of consistency for this team, it might be time for Rafael Stone to look and try and see what other teams would be interested in PJ Tucker's services and what he could get back as far as a PJ Tucker trade looks like. Just because if Tucker continues to play his value down, then it's just not, the Rockets aren't going to sign him to an extension. He's going to walk away for nothing this summer. It's just, you might as well try and see what you can get for him now if they're not content on extending him and letting him kind of be that vocal locker room presence. Because at the same time, with Tucker still around, it feels like Silas is kind of obligated to play him. And if he's playing poorly, you shouldn't be obligated to play anybody. Like, if somebody's playing a bad game, you should be able to sit him and say, hey, you're not right this game. Go get your head screwed on straight and I'll play you next time or something. But P.J. Tucker in this one not having a great game, maybe you could just attribute it to the abdominal cramps or whatever he was dealing with, the abdominal strain. But he's also been kind of unimpressive through some of his other games this season. It's just been an up and down year for P.J. Tucker. So hard to expect a lot out of him. So I do want to talk about a couple more things in this one moving forward. Some things that we would like to see out of this team moving forward. All that good stuff in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag. NFL playoffs are here, NBA season is in full swing, and Major League Baseball is right around the corner, and there is only one place that has you covered and one place that we here at Locked On Rockets trust, and that is betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, for your very own 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Look, there are great games across all three of the major sports leagues every night, and you don't want to look, don't sit on the sidelines anymore, right? You can get in on the action with Bet Online. So don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your very first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Discussing the Rockets' 109-103 loss against the Phoenix Suns, in which they outplayed Phoenix in the second half, pretty much entirely in the second half, and they just, it went down too much in the first half. That 12-point deficit at halftime was just a little bit too much to overcome. And hey, where have we heard this story before? A 12-point deficit early in the game that you have to overcome, and then you get really close at the end, and the other team just eventually pulls away. Getting real tired of these. But again, this is the kind of game that you expect from a young team that hasn't had the chance to really gel together. And the fact that they're showing fight through these games is the biggest takeaway to me, because once they get John Wall back and put back into the lineup, he answers a lot of these problems. But I do think one area that's really interesting is Silas's rotations and how to get the most out of, because the Rockets have a lot of one-way guys right now. They've got a lot of guys who are really, really great defensively, and then bring a, you know, their offense has some issues, or they've got some guys that are really great offensively, but then defensively they bring some issues and they present some problems as far as lineups go. And so right now, I'm looking at the Rockets roster and I'm trying to figure out what lineups would be the best served as far as balancing the offense and the defense. And I mean, if we're considering PJ Tucker as being the starting four still, then the starting lineup is more or less, it's John Wall, it's Victor Oladipo, it's Jayshon Tate moving forward until Daniel House comes back. PJ Tucker at the four spot and Christian Wood, which is a relatively balanced lineup if Jayshon Tate continues to at least shoot the three at a reliable rate, somewhere north of 30%. And he can also create off the dribble, he can facilitate for others, so that's a pretty decent starting lineup. Seeing Victor Oladipo play a little bit off ball will be nice, rather than having to create his own three-point looks all the time, you know, maybe getting some wide open looks generated by John Wall, by Jayshon Tate, that kind of stuff. So I don't mind that one as much, but then off the bench, it's where you start getting into those substitution patterns that things become a little interesting. I really don't think Mason Jones and Ben McLemore can be on the floor at the same time. It provides too much of a liability defensively having both of those guys out there. I'd like to see their minutes staggered. And kind of getting them plugged in to where they can be the guys that are having plays exclusively run for them the moment they check into the game. So again, right, you throw Mason Jones in there, you know, bottom of the first or top of the second, same thing for Ben McLemore, and then you just do the inverse for the second guy. So let Mason Jones get some burn, bottom of the first, top of the second, and then when you sit him down, bring Ben McLemore back in and get Ben McLemore, you know, 4 or 5 minutes of run. And just see which shooter has it. Because having both of those guys out there in the Rockets' backcourt, especially in the Rockets' backcourt, is such a stark difference in point of attack defense, in just overall, like, you know, defensive capability, going from a backcourt of Victor Oladipo and Eric Gordon to Mason Jones and Ben McLemore at the same time is rather painful. Now, obviously, with John Wall back, the guard rotations are going to look a little bit different anyways, but it'll be interesting to see where Silas balances Mason Jones and Ben McLemore, because Mason Jones has shown that he has an absolute flamethrower. The guy can score, and the guy can shoot, and the guy can shoot from distance. It's just about generating those open looks for him, and I think he's also a little hesitant at times. And that's probably just, you know, first year jitters. You know, he's on the biggest stage right now, and you know, he's a young guy. He's only 22 years old, undrafted rookie, getting serious minutes already for a team. And there were points in the Suns game where he had shots, you know, passes were being generated and sent his way, where he could have reasonably shot the ball, where he had kind of a window to get a shot up, and instead he was hesitant, or he, you know, made the extra pass, which, you know, probably shouldn't have been an extra pass, situations like that for Mason Jones. And hopefully that level of confidence will get to him where he just realizes, hey, you know, I'm a shooter, and what do? Shooters shoot. And that's what he's getting paid to do. That's what he needs to do when he's in the game. Ben McLemore, on the other hand, absolutely understands that his role is to shoot the ball when he gets in the game. But unfortunately, not a great shooting performance against the Suns for Benny Mac. Just 1 of 4 shooting. Kind of some rough shooting overall down the entire line. Tate, 1 of 3. C. Wood, 2 of 6. Eric Gordon, 3 of 7. Was reasonably solid. Victor Oladipo, 1 of 5. Cousins missed both of his three-point attempts, I should say. David Nwaba missed his only one. And then, as I said, Ben McLemore, 1 of 4. Mason Jones, 2 of 3. So the team shot 10 of 31 overall, 32.3%. They did shoot better at the free throw line, finally. After hanging a lot of points at the free throw line in previous games, they finally shot 19 of 22 at the charity stripe for 86.4%. That was kind of a nice little improvement to see. David Nwaba going 5 of 5, Victor Oladipo going 7 of 7 at the free throw line, kind of carrying the team in that regard. But let's go back to DeMarcus Cousins here for a split moment, and I think Cousins will probably be where I wrap things up for this show, just because Cousins has been kind of polarizing through the early part of the season. He's been very, I don't even want to say up and down, because there haven't been a lot of ups. He's had very short stretches where he's looked really good as far as, you know, his playmaking, his hands defensively, creating good looks, you know, for others in the offense, because he's a great passing big. But he just has not been able to find the ability to put the ball in the basket, either from behind the three-point line or even right up close at the rim. You know, he's missed a lot of bunnies, a lot of easy looks. He doesn't look like he's moving super well, unfortunately. But I still believe that we haven't seen the best of DeMarcus Cousins yet, because he just hasn't been, it feels like he hasn't been utilized properly. And what I mean by that is, what we're seeing out of Cousins and have been seeing up until this game against the Suns is he's basically been playing almost equivalent to Christian Wood in the offense, where he plays almost exclusively five out. He's on the perimeter, you know, the entirety of the time that he's on the floor, and he's doing a lot of dribble handoff with the guards, and he's doing some rolling to the basket. But he's also doing like these awkward drives where he catches the ball and he'll kind of pump fake a three, and so he'll get you know, a little bit of an advantage against the defender. But because he's just not moving that well, it's not that much of an advantage. Like, DeMarcus Cousins going off the dribble right now is not, like, it's not a fast play. Like, he's just not a fast guy off the bounce. And so the defense is able to kind of easily recover off that, which is forcing him into some really awkward-looking drives and shots at the hoop. And we even saw a couple of those in the Suns game. But what we did see finally, which I was kind of clamoring for, I think I even spoke about it in the most recent podcast before this one, was seeing DeMarcus Cousins post up a little bit. Because if DeMarcus gets down in the post, he's able to use his size to his advantage. And he's a skilled enough big that he has enough skill, right, you know, in and around the rim to, you know, use a bit of a softer touch, you know, once he gets right up close to the rim. You know, a little bit of finesse in his game coupled with kind of the power moves that he has in his bag to get some easier attempts. And if teams don't send a double team down to deal with him, then he's going to get an easy two at the rim against a lot of different centers in the league. He's a skilled big. And so what we saw in this one is, even though he didn't get, you know, feast in the post against the Suns, we saw him down in the post, and we saw him kind of facilitating the offense out of the post, which was nice to see. There was the very first post-up play that he had where he spun baseline, drew the defense in. And honestly, I think if Sterling Brown had rotated to the corner a little bit faster, it would have wound up in a corner three-point attempt for Sterling Brown, because his defender was the one who originally came over to double-team Boogie, and Sterling was late on rotating to the corner to give Boogie an outlet pass. So Boogie hit Sterling Brown. The defense recovered, rotated to him. Sterling Brown hits Eric Gordon at the top of the key. And Eric, as the defense is scrambling to recover, took off straight to the rim and got an easy 2 points at the rim and an easy reverse layup. And so the way that that works, right, is it forces the defense to make a decision. It forces them to decide, are we going to let DeMarcus Cousins play one-on-one in the post, or are we going to send a second man and force the ball out of his hands? And by forcing the ball out of his hands, you get the defense scrambling. And that's what we need to see more of in this Rockets offense, is we need to see them generating those easier opportunities, those easy looks. And I think at least while they have Cousins on the floor for the 10 to 15 minutes that he's out there, running the offense through him in the post, as well as some of the dribble handoff stuff that we're seeing on the perimeter, is the optimal way to use him. But if you're only using him on the perimeter, pretty much exclusively the same way that you're using Christian Wood as that dribble handoff pick and roll threat or pick and pop threat, then I think you're doing a disservice to DeMarcus Cousins at this stage in his career and what he's capable of, because again, he just doesn't look like he's moving that well outside, you know, from, you know, as far as the driving lanes and stuff are concerned. It just doesn't look like it's easy for him to generate offense that way, whereas at least down in the post, you take away the speed element of it, because then all he's focused on is overpowering his defender, which he's more, even skinny Boogie is more than capable of overpowering a number of the defenders in this league. So I think that's kind of where I want to wrap things up for. I don't think there's anything else to really hit on or focus on from this game. I think the defense was really promising in this one, and the good news is the Rockets have an offensive-minded head coach in Steven Silas, so fixing the offense shouldn't really be that big of an issue, but seeing all the really great individual defensive performances in this one, shout out, I didn't give Sterling Brown any props, but he had some really good possessions in this one as well, playing basically man-to-man defense, picking up defenders full court. And then who else had a really solid night? Oladipo had 3 steals. I mean, again, a really great point of attack defender in Victor Oladipo. And getting John Wall back in the mix with this team is going to be really exciting to see what they can actually do. And at the end of the day, there's some people who are already clamoring for this team to start tanking. I really want to see this team be 100% healthy and get a few cracks at it with a full roster before deciding that this team should just ultimately tank. Because tanking sucks. Like actively tanking really does suck. Now, if you're actually going out there and playing competitive basketball and you just tank kind of organically, then sure, like, go for it, right? If you get to the end of the season and maybe you have to intentionally lose a couple games to be, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, then yeah, by all means, go for it. But intentionally tanking this early in the season just because the team is faced with a little bit of adversity, I don't think is the right way to go, at least not just yet. This team could easily be a bottom playoff team and, you know, have an exciting little playoff stint, right? They could take some games off. It could be a fun little playoff bout. I've said it before, this team kind of matches the Oklahoma City Thunder as far as what they may or may not be able to do in the postseason, although they're arguably a more talented team than that Thunder roster. They've got a lot of the right pieces, a really good defensive lineup, and they just need to figure a few things out here and there. And really, you know, Victor Oladipo said it best, be patient with us, because this team can, I think, make some noise, like, legitimately. So for today's episode, I think that's going to be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.